With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Everybody has a UFO story, from seeing it, abduction stories, but why does some years and decades have more sightings than others? I don't know, but maybe our guest today, Cheryl Costa, will be able to answer some of our questions. She's a veteran of two military services, the Air Force and Navy, retired from Lockheed Martin as a senior data security analyst, an author and journalist. We're going to talk about some of the UFO sighting statistics. Maybe we can find out some answers. And what we don't get here today on Truth Be Told, you can get your tickets for Contact in the Desert, June 25th through the 28th, where Cheryl will be lecturing about modern UFO statistics and deep data forensic. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, the one and only Cheryl Costa.
Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, how you doing, Tony?
I'm wonderful, and I'm excited. Normally, we do this like on a Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but this is a good way to wake up and on a Thursday morning. So, thank you for doing this on a morning.
Happy to do it.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you about you're coming up at the Contact in the Desert. You're going to be lecturing there. And, that's one of the biggest conferences in the world. And now you have a brand new book out to share new statistics and new data and analysis with all the fans of Contact. So this is going to be fun. So today we're going to touch on stuff because we don't want to give everything away.
No.
Yeah. But, people are here to learn from you and listen to our show and get excited about buying the tickets. So, but first of all, like I said in the intro, everybody has their own story with UFOs. I don't know how many times over the last 8 years I've been doing the show, people say, oh, I don't really believe in it. But one time, actually, I had an experience. I saw something, but I didn't really understand what it was. But it still stuck with them enough to remember that moment. So I always start with my guest, especially when we're talking about UFOs. What was your moment that got you on this journey of seeing a UFO?
Okay. I'm an old lady, so I was about 12 years old in 1965. And we had been a couple weeks before school started again. So this was before Labor Day. And our schools here always start just right after Labor Day. And we had been up visiting an uncle in a rural area of upstate New York. And we were coming down off the hill where his farm is. And it was a good year that year. The corn was higher than the car, you know. And we're on a little dirt road. And as we're coming down the hill, my mother had my father stop the car and kind of pull off the dirt road a little bit. And she pointed out into a clear blue, not a cloud in the sky kind of thing, blue sky in the west.
Wow.
And this is about 4:30 in the afternoon. There is a silver ball parked out there like a rock. Okay, to give you an idea how big it was, if you hold your arm out and look at your little fingernail, that's about how big it was. It was pretty big. And my mom said, well, at that point, 65, she said, well, NASA has been around a couple of years. Maybe it's something they're doing. Could be something the Air Force is doing. It might be a weather balloon. It might be people from another world. Now, my brother and sister were toddlers, so they were oblivious to what this conversation was. But mom and dad explained that to me, and we sat there for 15 minutes watching it. It didn't zoom away. And then we got back on the road, got down to the bottom of the hill, turned left to head on the state road to go back to our home. And I got up in the back window, those big old Chevy Impalas,
right,
those nice big windows. And I got up in that window, and I sat there and said, "Who are you guys? Who are you guys?" You know?
Right.
And when it left, it was, I didn't see an effect like this again until the late 1980s with some of the new Star Trek movie type things that were coming out. You know, it was one of those gone, boom, you know, that type
right,
of thing.
Right.
Okay. And it just absolutely rattled me. And thereafter, that changes you.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and I, you know, kids, teenagers, you know, hey, mom and dad are stupid, you know. So, but my mom and I disagreed on a lot of stuff. But that was one topic we could talk sanely about and respectfully about. And we'd get books at the library, bring them home. I'd read one. She'd read one. We'd kind of give each other a little book report, what's in the other book, that type of thing. Later in high school, when Von Daniken's book, Chariots of mm-hmm. Gods, became available as a paperback in the U.S., our copy, she dog-eared on the top, I dog-eared on the bottom. The book was destroyed, you know. I didn't see another one until 6 years later, from when I was 12. When I was 18, 19 years old, I was in Cameron Bay, Vietnam. I was in the Air Force. Christmas Eve, about 11:30 at night, Christmas Eve, 1971, we were walking down from our barracks, a friend of mine and I, and we were going to go to midnight mass for something to do. Okay. And neither one of us were practicing Catholics at that point, but we figured, hey, midnight mass tradition. It's Christmas. Yeah. Let's go, you know. So we went down and we're walking along off in the western sky. And it's one of those nights, it was like a gazillion stars in the sky kind of thing. Galaxy high kind of thing. We saw this streak going across the sky. And we just said, jet. You know?
Right, right.
And then it stops. And my friend says, that thing stopped. Jets don't stop. And in those days, they didn't. And it was too fast for a helicopter. And we said, what the heck, you know? And I said, Tom, if that thing is what I think it is, it's going to start dancing around like a fairy. Suddenly starts doing that stuff and then gone.
Wow.
Neither one of us had our minds on midnight mass.
Right. I'm sure not. You know? In the heavens, but just not that heaven.
Yeah. Give me a moment. My headphone cable was caught on the wheel of the chair.
Oh, there. You'd be walking like that.
So, okay. When I got in the Air Force, I had a clearance. And later, when I got in the Navy, I had a high clearance. And they frowned on things like MUFON. And MUFON was like one of the few organizations around. Heck, my mother got a mimeograph letter from them in 1969 announcing they had this little thing called a mutual UFO network, you know.
Right.
And she may have joined, but I didn't, because I shouldn't at the time. So problem is, all through my career, including in aerospace, I held this high clearance, and they frown on this stuff. So I always was just read on the topic. Magazines would come across my desk or something like that. You know, somebody would say, hey, you're in the UFOs here. Look at this, you know. In 1990, I had been on a business trip, and I got hospitalized while I was on the business trip. And when I came back, I had closed out my apartment and put everything in storage because I was going to be gone for like 3-4 months. And I was going to get a new apartment when I got back. Well, I come back and I don't have a home to go to. And I've just been hospitalized, had surgery. So this friend of mine and I talked, and he said, look, my father's on chemo. I'm staying with him at his house. Here's the keys. Feed the cat. You know, stay as long as you like over at my house. He didn't have cable. Okay. So I go over there, and this guy's got first hardback editions of everything UFO up to 1990.
Oh, my God.
He has everything Stanton Friedman wrote up to that point.
Wow.
Okay.
It was like the divine intervention here.
It was like college, right? You know, it's here's this 5 foot wide, 6 foot high case with hardback books. So with no cable in the place, I just sort of went to school on UFOs. I read everything you had in there.
Right.
All right. Again, I couldn't do much, but just I'm informed. All right. I retire out of Lockheed in 2011. Unceremoniously, they went down the hall about 3 weeks before that, before I was retired, took the 45-year people and said, you're retired. Came down a week later and said, the 40-year people, you're retired. I was in the 32-year group. And they said, you 30-year people, you're retired. You know, it was a big rift. Okay, right. Reduction in force.
Right.
So I managed to finish my degree, that 40-year-old bachelor's degree. I'd been tinkering it for years. I was a poor kid when I came out of high school, and I couldn't afford to go to college. So I worked on it all my career. Got my associate's degree back in 1978, and I went to Empire State College here and got all my credits transferred in and had to do about 30 hours residency. Well, I had started just before I did that. It's in 2012. I think this was the kick in the pants. I was working for a newspaper in the technical department. I wasn't a writer yet. I wasn't a journalist yet. And I was working in the technical department. We had just put the evening edition or the morning edition to bed. You know, you print it over, overnight. And I'd gotten home about 3:30 in the morning, gazillion stars in the sky kind of night, clear, just parked the car in the garage. And every night I sort of had this little ritual of looking out at the Big Dipper and the North Star, that type of thing, you know, and I was sitting there looking at it, thinking, clearing my head, and I hear this and going, what the heck? And then I look up and I start noticing the stars are being blotted out. This thing ultimately was at least a football field long and about 2 to 3 stories deep triangle. The classic thing that people draw and sketch, it's what it was. Dave Marler has a model of one, okay? I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, and I could just stand there, you know, I had cell phone in my pipe, you know, you don't think to pull the darn phone out, you know, and it was moving about 40 or 50 miles an hour casually. Well, I didn't report the thing. I mean, I didn't want that nutcase label in those days, right?
Right.
Well, I started writing a column for another newspaper in town. And it was really dicey because the newspaper I worked for didn't want it, but they were upset with me because I was writing for the competition.
Oh, wow.
But my job at their paper was I made the plates every night, and I was an electronic technician when called on. And I said, you're not paying me to be a journalist, so I'm being a journalist over there. Like I said, it was always a dicey situation. But before I got that column in 2012, a couple of months later, November 5th, 2012, there was a little sidebar story on CNN.com that said UFOs have been declining since the 1980s. Maybe they were always just an urban legend. And I read that little 150-word sidebar story, and I said, that feels like misinformation. So I went out for the first time in my life. I went out to the National UFO Reporting Center, and I went dug down in there and started reading some reports. And there were a lot of very earnest reports in there. Some of them short, some of them long, you know. And I said, wow, this is wild. So I went to a back page someplace, got year-end totals, dropped them into a spreadsheet, and I watched the thing go up like a rocket, you know, on a curve,
right.
And going, whoa, what memo didn't the UFOs get? You know? So the next few nights, I was, after the presses were rolling, all I had to do was sit there for 2 hours with everybody else that was putting the edition out and just let the presses run. Okay. 700 ton Swiss press. So we sat there, and I sit there and looked at these things every night and was reading all these interesting accounts people made. And they were, most of them were very sincere. I was expecting kooks, nuts, and idiots.
Right,
you know?
Right.
No, there were a few kooks, nuts, and idiots, but most people, I never believed in this stuff until we saw this thing while we were laying on the hood of my wife's car, you know, that kind of statement.
Right.
So I was taking, my degree is in entertainment writing and production. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I started punching up a couple of these little stories, make a little 400-word column article. Okay. pitched them around to about 10 or 12 editors around the region where we still had a lot of newspapers. I got laughed at. I got thrown out of the office. I got escorted to the door by security, you know, right. All that kind of stuff. And then I finally called up, actually, what was my last choice? A little weekly paper called the Syracuse New Times. Well, turned out the new editor-in-chief had been a retired copy editor from the paper I worked for.
Oh, there's your way in.
Come on over. Let's talk. Well, he sat down. Before he even looked, I had five sheets of paper as a pitch sheet, okay? And he said, I want to talk to you about this topic matter first. So we started talking about it, and we're about the same age. So he had read all the same guys, Frank Edwards, early Stenton Friedman, all that stuff, you know? So we were on the same page. He said, I'm sympathetic. I can't write that column because I'm the editor-in-chief, but you can. Go ahead. We'll try you out for a month. Hmm. I said, okay. Now, he had that tone of like the Dread Pirate Roberts,
right,
from
the
Princess Bride, you know, almost likely kill you in the morning kind of thing, you know. And he called me up about a month later. He says, come on over. We got to talk. I thought, oh, that's it.
It's over. Yeah, with, it's,
you know,
over.
Five articles I tried. Later. You know? And I got over to the parking lot. They were tearing it up. I had a hell of a time finding a parking place. I'm 10 minutes late to the meeting. I walk in. He's talking to the other columnists, right? Sees me walk in, stops, points at me, says, there's our rock star. I look at him. What? He says, you're pulling more page views than all the columnists combined. You've only been here 4 weeks.
Wow. It shows
so
interest.
We both knew it made sense and it would be logical and it would go, you know, mm-hmm. And it was on the online edition. Okay. Which is what I pitched it for.
Right.
Because that was the up and coming thing, as they say. So he said, just keep doing what you're doing. 6 months later, my boss, and remember, this is a part-time job. I'm technically a freelance consultant. So I got to own all my articles.
Oh, that's perfect.
Which later, when they went out of business 2 years ago, I was able to print all 238 wow. of my articles in a book. But the bottom line was my editor, the digital editor, came to me about 6 months later and says, Cheryl, you've got a national audience. I said, we're on a little dinky weekly paper and I got a national audience. You're on the web, hon. And I'm going, oh, okay. So next thing I know, he's got me on Facebook. He says, promote a little bit in there in some of the UFO groups. I did that. Okay. They get to the Christmas party and him and the publisher hold up a drink. He says, Cheryl, you've got an international audience. And a little column I got paid $50 an article for, you know, it was crazy. But we did it. We did it a lot and everybody loved it. And it led to all, sometimes I had to have something to write about. People think, oh, it'd be fun to have a column. But you know what's funny about it is it's a grind. You've got to write something every week and you right. got to have it there by deadline. There's right. none of this sit back and not work on it till the night before like you did with term papers in school, you know.
That would and, be me.
fortunately, yeah, it's a lot of us. Fortunately, my wife, who's a career scientist, would say, I'd say, God, I don't know what to write about this week. And she said, well, you know, you haven't approached da 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 da. And have you thought about da 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 da? I'm going, no. So that it usually fueled me. And one of the things I started doing was I started going out to MUFON's site. I managed to get a guest account because I'm not allowed to be a member of MUFON because I'm a journalist. And we have a very strict conflict of interest clause. So I started looking up cities and counties and states, and I started adding this stuff up a little bit piecemeal here and there, and started noticing that New York State has a lot of stuff going on and going and we're talking right 21st century stuff.
All this behind me is UFO sightings. That's why I put this behind me.
Yes. Yes.
You can see New York area right here.
Whoops, yeah. There we go. A lot of stuff. So what we did was, We at one point, these articles got a lot of nice response from, you know, if I did one about a particular county, people found it, even people in Europe thought it was fun. I got nice mail about it. Oh, do more of those statistics. That's interesting. Nobody's talking about that stuff. So I did. So at one point in 2015, I basically spent 6 months. We didn't know what we were doing. We managed to do the data collection for every county in New York State, all 62 counties.
That's a lot of work.
And of course, I was doling it out a little bit every week, but I showed it to some of the old timer MUFON state directors, guys that hadn't done it in 10 years, mm-hmm. and showed them some of the stuff. And they said, huh, Cheryl, we didn't know there was a cluster there. We didn't know there was a cluster there either. You know, that type of thing. What do you mean Suffolk, Long Island is ground zero? It's supposed to be Erie, you know, that kind of thing. And Linda and I sat in our pub in October of 2015. And staring at across a couple of pints and said, look at all the cool stuff we found. You know, look at all the cool stuff we're waking people up to. Nobody knew that all this stuff was going on. And she looks at me and says, what would happen if we did the whole country? And it took, like I said, it took us 6 months to do that one state. And I think, oh my goodness, it would probably take us a year or two. It took 18 months. 18 months worth of weekends because we were both working. We had own time we had to work on. It was on weekends. And we didn't know what we were doing. There were things that took us 2 months to do back in 2016, mm-hmm. when we were building the first book, that I can do in 2 days now.
Right.
We were both government contractors. I worked for Lockheed on contracts, and she worked for a company that supplied research librarians to like the National Academy of Science and EPA and things like that. She was the head librarian at the Environmental Protection Agency for 15 years.
Oh,
smart.
Wow.
Lady.
Yeah.
Okay. And not just somebody who stamps books. Research librarians are doing the research work.
Right.
Me.
Exactly.
So, the first rule of government contracting, do as little work as possible. Okay.
I had to make that clear.
Okay. It's important because right, right. what it forces you to do is one, log your time.
Right.
Two, it forces you to do procedures. When you learn how to do something and figure out, well, God, I should have done it this way. So we started writing our own process procedure, and we had a little 3-ring notebook with all the notes. When you process New Fork data, National UFO Reporting Center, when you do their data, do this first, do this second, do this third, da 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 da. When you do MUFON data, it's different. Do this first, do this, you know, and right down the line, and then build all these things up the way we did. And it was complicated because we did the same thing most people do. If you're going to write a book, you sit down in Word and you start building it up from page mm-hmm, one, chapter mm-hmm. one up. It took 18 months. Okay. And we had a 374 page book.
Wow.
This pink book, we set out to do something a little bit different back during the lockdown. Okay. During the lockdown. One of the things we wanted to do is people had been begging us, you know, you must have resolution down to the municipal and local level. And I said, we do, but it's problematic. And they said, why? Some 17 to 18% of people misspelled the name of their city.
Right.
They either made it all capitals or they put a space in front of it, or they made it a mixed case or all small case. And sometimes they would say, oh, it's in Joesburg, right next to Bob's gas station. You know, you can't search on that kind of stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So back in the summer of 2020, not like we were going anyplace. We had nothing better to do. We were gaining too much weight and watching too much streaming TV. I told her, I said, we're going to do a 20-year book in 2020, at the end of 2020. I said, we better straighten out this problem with the spelling. So we got a golden mail list, paid some money for a golden mail list, colored it, made the fields line up with the database, merged it in, and about 1,200 to 1,500 lines a day, we corrected the spelling. Corrected the county if necessary, because the automation we use to put the county data in, neither database collects county. To put the county data in, the automation puked on misspelled cities. So that was erroneous. We fixed that. And while we were at it, we added lat longitude information and zip code information to the database, cleaned it all up. Took 650 hours from the second week of August 2020 to the first week of January 2021. That's when I started working on the book. Now, because we also developed a technique instead of starting at the beginning with chapter one, we decided to do it, build everything up in PDFs. So if you wrote an article, you made a PDF. You made a chart, you made a PDF. And then what we did was, it's like kids blocks, we just got into Adobe Acrobat and just started stacking right. everything in the thing in the order we needed it. And the actual production, after we generated all the charts, tables, and everything we were going to do, I sat her down. She took a week vacation. She had a burn vacation. She took a week's vacation. I laid out all the charts on the bed. Then I laid another full set of charts on the book, and she started organizing them. Then she took the narrative stuff we wrote, and she said, okay, everything that's got your name on it, it's yours. Everything's got my name on it, it's mine. Everything we're writing together, we just won't put our name on. I said, fine. And she took that whole 40-hour week plus the weekend and did all that. So the book got put together in 750 hours instead of almost 2,000 like the 17 book was.
Well, at least you had that the model before that you could you know, correct things and get things done faster, so you didn't have to put that's two. I mean, even 700 hours is a lot of hours.
Well, it's a lot of work, but you know what I had to do both with correcting the I was on a burn, correcting the spelling and everything.
Right.
I'm retired. Okay, so I literally got up every morning and treated it like a work day at Lockheed. So I got up, got my coffee, a little nibble to eat, and I sat down and started doing it until I crapped out. 6.5, 7 hours a day is what it took.
Right.
And you got sick of staring at line after line after line of the database spreadsheet. So there was that. And so we had all that. But the deal is we've produced the UFO sightings desk reference. This is a 20-year sample of 21st century UFO sightings. Now, when we did the first book in 2017, people said to us, why didn't you go back 40 years for your statistics? So we decided to put that one to bed. When I requested my dumps from MUFON, and Newfork was available online as it was, I requested 1960 to 2000 data. And I said, I don't want shapes. I don't want narrative. I only want dates. Okay. So I can measure magnitude.
Right.
So between 1960 and 2000, there were 13,150 sightings total for 40 years. Reported sightings for 40
reported,
years.
Yes.
Okay. There's a poll that was done in 2017 by Fox Pictures when they were releasing a movie. And they asked, you know, do you believe in UFOs? You know, are you on the fence? Do you don't think they are? But they also ask a question that no other poll had asked at that point. They asked the idea, have you seen a UFO? Didn't mean reported. Have you seen one? And it came back with a metric of about 16.7%. I didn't trust the metric. 2 years later, Gallup poll did a similar poll, September of 2019, and they confirmed that 16% number. Well, population, 76% of the U.S. population of 328 million is about 42 million people, 42, 45 million people, okay, adults. So, but we had that, but we only had at the time when I was still working on the last year's data, 148,000 sighting reports. There's a big mismatch here. And then when Gallup poll came out,
hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We said, still doesn't add up. So we started working back and forth, and we found a metric that basically the number runs a range, but basically we figure 1 in 153 to 1 in 300 people report what they see. And that seems to be about what you talk to people, you know, it's a very big mix. Used to be 1 in 10. And that 1 in 10 people, I didn't buy that. And then they told me, well, it's Cheryl, it's 1 in 10 of the 1 in 10. Okay. 10 people see it. 10 people see it. One person reports it.
Right.
And, you know, So we got a really good number on it. But when you crank that 250 back against the sightings, we have millions of sightings in the United States on a day-to-day basis. Even if you throw 70% away, which a lot of people like me to do because they say there's a lot of crap in there. Okay, right. Fine. Dr. Villay says 80% is noise. MUFON says 70% is noise. So we had a little chalk talk where we would say 70% is noise. We're going to take 30% off the top.
Hmm.
But still, that 30%, when you cut it down, divided across 20 years, divided by months, it comes down to 224 a month. And if all states were equal, they're not, but if all 50 states were equal, it would come down to 4 exotic sightings a month, every month for the last 20 years, one a week, essentially.
Wow. Well, Cheryl, I know people that love fact, because a lot of times, you know, with even Ancient Aliens, a lot of the stuff is speculation and hearsay and, you know, passed down through the centuries and passed down through generations. But what you're giving us is stats, which is fact-given statements. So that's one
numbers,
thing.
Numbers don't lie.
Yes, numbers don't lie. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break for Contact in the Desert. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you about, you know, where did you get the information? Was it only from MUFON? So don't answer just yet. And also, I forgot what I was going to ask for a second, but we'll get to that when we come back. So don't go anywhere. We're talking with Cheryl Costa, who's going to be speaking at Contact in the Desert coming up June 25th through the 28th. So here we go. Be right back.
When you start to ask the question, it unfolds the fabric of space itself, how it's made. What is it made of?
We're not alone in this universe. We never have been.
Alien intelligences have cohabited with us on this planet for millions of years.
We inherited the obsession from the Anunnaki.
Anyone that still thinks that we're the ones that are obsessed with gold does not know enough about the true history of our species, how we came to be here,
and the conditions that brought us here.
We are not unique in this universe. Extraterrestrials do exist. We are, so to say, the copies of them.
Okay, we're back with Cheryl Costa. Yes, you saw the video, and she's going to be talking at Contact in the Desert and about what we're talking about. I'm sure she'll go into bigger details, but this is the new book, UFO Sightings Desk Reference 2001 to 2020, which was a crazy year in itself. But
you want to know why it's pink?
Yeah, tell me why it's pink.
Two stories. One, two women put it together, and it's dedicated to Coral Lorenz, who was the original started APRO.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
That was the plan. We wanted this to be a women's thing, a girls club, so to speak. They had Project Blue Book with Air Force. We were going to give them Project Pink Book.
Right.
The other issue was there was some anticipation back in 2020 that if we did have like what appears to be happening, we'll probably end up with congressional hearings.
It sounds like it.
And there were some people that made a very strong point to me. Some leadership in the UFO community said, Cheryl and Linda, you're the only people that's ever published any statistics since Project Blue Book.
Have they contacted you yet?
No, but my congressman has a copy of the book. Okay. And Steve Bassa has a copy, and he said, there's nothing like this. I'll promote it, you know? So that could be a deal. So Linda and I had this idea when we were doing the book, said, if it's going to be up there in the hands of some congressman or something like that, I want him to be thumbing through a pink book.
That's great.
Subversive, you know.
and it's as thick as some of the bills that they send through Congress too. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. We're credited with one concussion already. some wife hit her husband over the head with it.
Right,
that's 2.7 pounds.
Oh, that's a good weapon right there.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you with the stats.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of places you can get stats, but of course, MUFON is one of the, you know, well, is the largest organizations, but there's also military, there's other organizations.
No. Okay, here's what we did.
Set me straight.
National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, people. Okay, their data represents 60% of what's in the book. MUFON is only about 40%, and it's been very consistent. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when the numbers started coming back in early 2020,
right,
you know, after being in the toilet for a couple of years, people were asking me, you know, where do you think this is going to shake out? I had a model built. All I had to do was dump in NUFORC data
right
at the end of each month. And you have to be careful with MUFON data at the each month because they usually have around anywhere from 150 to 300 international sightings in the database for any one single month.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of account for that. Okay. And basically, we had a model using that 60-40 model, 60-40 and some change, so
right,
to speak. And we thought we were going to be plus or minus 2%. Predicting where the number would be at the end of 2020, we were 0.02%. We were that accurate.
Wow. That's pretty
good.
So
it ends up 20 years worth of sightings, 167,632. And it was basically, this is an average. This is not what the actual chart looks like. The average was about 8,400 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Monthly, about 700 a month. In the United States, weekly about 160 a week, and about 23 a day. It was the baseline.
Wow!
And we actually graphed that with a bar chart. We would dump a year's worth of data, just the lines, and you could have this little noise thing going right across the screen. And so we've got that. The actual. Let me see if you can get this up there. Ah, yeah. There we go.
Let me go to this single shot so they can see it better. There we go.
Okay. Now, you notice how it goes, it starts rising up from 2001 up to about 2005 or six.
Yep, I do.
What that is indicating, people are saying, well, why is it rising like that? Well, the reason for that is, I'm going to take this away.
Okay.
People having access to broadband. I'm retired from IT industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when broadband began being proliferated.
Yeah.
In major metropolitan areas, we already know there's a lot of sightings, major metropolitan areas, and also their suburbs. So one of the back in 2017 with the other book, we said the drivers were population, but it's not the knee jerk everybody thinks it is, population, temperate weather, and leisure time. Okay. Those were the major three drivers that we had at the time. Okay. The drivers now. Okay, in this book, we have two categories, drivers and influencers. Okay, the drivers are population, temperate weather. Now, people ask me, what's the heck means that by that? If you're in a northern state, there's a quiescent amount of sightings all year long, but July and August go like that. Okay, you go down to a middle-level state, like we'll say like Virginia, that
right
peak starts coming down and the other levels come up. And then you get to deep south states, it's statistically flat. And if you go in the seriously deep south, we're talking like down the bottom of Texas, down
right
the tip of Florida, there's actually a dip in the summertime because it's too bloody hot to be outside.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the temperate weather thing. The leisure time thing, we only had a sense of it, but from reading reports, we had a sense that it was always, I was out for a smoke. I was out walking the dog. Dog walkers and smokers are the most reliable site reports of UFOs there is. In fact, the MUFON field investigators tell me when they scan for like a month's worth of sightings, like for their state,
right,
they scan for smoke or dog. Because these people are out there day in and day out.
Yeah.
They know the lay of the land. They know what's abnormal. And right. usually if you're walking a dog, if a UFO comes along, the dog goes, you know, that kind of thing, you know. So there's all that. The other thing, but the drivers, population, temperate weather, leisure time. Well, since that time, we have plotted hourly charts. And the hourly charts go from, I'm going to draw it here, go, and it goes up. So 70% of the sightings happen between about 5 o'clock at night and 11:30. Hmm. And the other 16 hours of the day represent only 25% of the sightings.
Wow.
Wow. A lot of people think it's an even thing right. all day long. It's right. not. It's and not. It's consistent with every state. So that kind of shoots a hole in the skeptics who say, oh, this stuff is all random, kooks, nuts, and idiots. If it was random, it would be statistically noise.
Right.
And it's not. The hourly charts are amazing. Now, in a couple of states where they have very few sightings, like the Dakotas and things like this, the numbers are all over the place. Because they have such a small sample set, but everybody who had any kind of good sample set, we got good pictures of the hours of the day. Saturday is the top day for sightings.
Because most people are off. And
most people are off. Of course, you know, I've had some FM radio jocks, you know, say, well, everybody gets drunk and stoned on Saturday night, you know.
Right, right.
But no, because people who are drunk and stoned don't fill out a UFO sighting report. It's got as much charm as filling out a credit application.
Right.
Okay. Would you like to know some of the top counties and cities?
Well, I was going to ask you that because, well, first, when I was a kid, and my family, and I'm not going to go into whole detail, but my mom, my sisters, and myself, and my brother, we saw a UFO. And in the late 70s, there was a lot of sightings in my I'm from Kansas, Elk County, Kansas. There was a lot of sightings at that time. We did have, you know, we do have McConnell Air Force Base up in Wichita, and they actually did come down and do some look around when my mom called them and told them that we saw a sight. But through your, as you can see, if the people that are listening to the podcast, not visually seeing it, behind me is a map of UFO sightings, and I'm not for sure when this was, but you see a lot of...
That's New Fork data only.
That is? Okay. But
I know who made it.
So who, through your, what, 40-some, almost, well, now probably, what, 60 to, two, that's what's almost, yeah, 60 years of research, where are some of the biggest sightings, and from your personal opinion, I know we're talking about stats, why do you think that is? That they're around these certain areas.
Okay. Real quick run on the drivers. This is important. This will answer the question. Population, temperate weather, leisure time, hours of darkness, observer access to broadband.
Got it.
Proximity. Okay. These are secondary influencers. Proximity to large bodies of water, coastal, Great Lakes, ocean, that type of thing. Proximity to toxic ecosystems, proximity to geological faults, and the generational effect. Now, Los Angeles is the number one county in the United States. Los Angeles County, not the city. Los Angeles County is the number one county in the United States for sighting. They had 4,330, followed only by Maricopa County, essentially Phoenix. Now, both of them have had really interesting sighting. In February 1942, they had the Battle of L.A., okay.
Right.
And of course, they've had flying lights up and down those canyons since the 1880s that were reported in newspapers.
Right.
Maricopa County had the Phoenix lights 20 years ago. So we think that generational effect, again, they've got the temperate weather and all that going for it. But they have a thing, what we think to be generational effect. Grandpa told these really great stories about the thing they saw back in the day. Mom told us these stories about what they saw back in the day. If I look up regularly, maybe I'll see something. That's what it seems to be. But they also have the temperate environment. They've also got the population. They're major metropolitan areas with lots of broadband. Okay. So, and at least Los Angeles, they have coastal front too.
Right.
You know, so there's that. So it's Los Angeles County, Maricopa County, Cook County up on the Great Lakes, San Diego County, King County, Washington, Orange County, California, Riverside, California, Clark County, Nevada is number 8. Hmm. Okay. And then it gets into the Carolinas and Texas. California is number one, Florida is number two, and Texas is number three. And they've held those slots since 2006. The other seven or eight states play musical chairs. Okay, a couple of years ago, New York State, my home, it was number six. Yeah, and then it was number five. Now it's number four. You know, it goes up and down. Okay. Arizona tends to hold the number seven slot consistently. We don't know why. Okay. Now, cities. Phoenix, Arizona is number one. New York City is number two. Las Vegas is number three. That makes George Knapp happy. Los Angeles, the city, is number four. Seattle, Washington is number five. Portland, Oregon is number six. In fact, they had a big spike back during the riots in 2020. They had a huge spike of UFO sighting reports.
Really?
You know? No, they were outside.
Yeah,
you know?
And everybody, yeah.
So that's those are the bigger numbers. In the book, we give you, in general, we give you 216 top counties of the 3,125 counties that reported. That's just about everybody. It is not everybody, but it's almost everybody. And we reported from 20,000 municipalities.
Wow.
Okay. This tops Blue Book by comparison.
Right. So why do you, because I'm from the country, so 200 people in my hometown. When you go outside at night, I mean, stars galore. I mean, but in the bigger cities, you get the light pollution where it's hard to see up into the universe. So why do you think a lot of these cities are seeing a lot of sightings when so much of space is being blinded?
There's two answers to that. One is it because we have a lot of people seeing them that we have big numbers because it's a dense population?
Right.
Or is it because the aliens think we're cute to watch and they study us? Okay.
Which, right.
That's the deal. But I think one of the other things you have to look at is you look at all those drivers.
Right.
We found out with Los Angeles, if you go up into the hills, and a lot of people live in the hills,
right, that is true.
You're up above the city lights.
Right. That is true.
And you go to Phoenix, Arizona. I was down there to do a talk for their MUFON chapter. And, unless you got a thunderstorm, like the sky is clear for all directions and crystal clear. So that helps a great deal. Even you get above the light situation. Now, Kansas is interesting. In 20 years, they had 1,500 reported, about 75 a year, about six a month, about one half a week. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, but remember, Kansas is one of those rural states where we want to get broadband to.
Right.
The idea of rural broadband. I'll give you another example. I had a census chart. We have a census chart using government census maps, and we put arrows to it. And when you did the 2017 book, I was sitting there with the thing on my lap during a commercial break. And that's the first time I noticed this. All the states that were touching the Great Lakes had sightings in the many thousands, 2, 3, 4, 5,000. Okay. Move two states away and it was in the low hundreds. So that proximity to water is a deal.
I was going to ask about the water because it seems like a lot of water attracts sightings, it seems like.
Yes. Now, there are two issues with that. Now, go Florida and Texas. People will say, well, it's population driven. I says, look, Texas has twice the population of Florida, but Florida has many more sightings than does Texas. Mm-hmm. But they have 1,200 miles of coastal contact versus what Texas has. So that's a deal. There is a theory that when you have a beach situation, it's dark out there. Maybe you were talking about the light situation.
Right.
It's dark out there. So if there's something unusual in the sky, you're going to see it in that dark void versus over the bright city, you know?
Right.
So we think that has a lot to do with it as well. But there is the whole issue of USOs. Now, Southern California, San Diego area, isn't that where all those UFOs are buzzing around our fleet now?
Yeah. You know?
Down around Catalina Island, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, baby, they got stuff going on down there.
Well, we only have just a few minutes left, and my question is, the statistics, like I said, are very important to ufology, but for your own personal journey, why do you think they presented themselves to you so often? Maybe not through, you know, yearly, but they've seems like you've seen them more than once, twice, maybe three times. But why do you think they allowed you to see them more than once?
Okay. I wrote an article about this.
Oh, great.
Several of them, actually. People are always asking me, how come some people can't see them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It seems that some people have been touched in some way. Maybe once you've seen one, you're going to be able to see them from now on. Okay. There's that postulation. My colleague, Thomas Conwell, and I talked about this at length. But there's also the other thing. We had a report a number of years ago, a couple of them like this. People were up in the Adirondacks at their camp up there, deep in the woods next to a little lake, you know. And 10 people saw this incredible UFO. I'm not talking a light in the sky. This thing was down pretty low. Okay. 5 of them could see it clearly for what it was. 3 of them saw some kind of like almost cartoon abstract ramification of what it might be. And 2 of them looking straight at it and couldn't see it. Okay.
Hmm.
Remember, we see with our eyes, we mm-hmm. process with our brain.
Right.
Okay. And so I used to live in a Buddhist monastery. One of my lamas used to make the comment, people don't see certain things that are around them because their reality is not elastic enough to see it.
Right.
Okay. And basically that is a big issue with this elasticity of being able to see something. That's the best answer. I've seen a lot of things. I saw them young. And, you know, there are some families who are touched. I've reported stories on people who can trace people in their family being touched back almost 4 generations.
Right. Right. And I think, yeah. And I think a lot of times you've heard of abductions, then you find out, or sightings, you know, grandma and great grandma had just didn't talk about it, but then find out that was there. And even paranormal with ghosts, a lot of people,
it's all the same phenomena. It
yeah,
really is.
It's like, you know, kids see ghosts as children and then they hit a certain point and then they don't see them anymore.
It's the perception of what they think they see.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Believe me. One quick one with this. And
sure.
I had a couple of times, I had invitations to come to like a backyard barbecue as a reporter. And I didn't know if it was going to be a lynch mob or what. So right. I always took a security guy over with me, you know, and we got there and I got a burger and a beer in my hand and it's a real party. So right. Okay, great. And they'd always, after the security guy, hey, we want you to meet our Uncle Ralph or our Aunt Susie, right? You know, Uncle Ralph saw a few Foo Fighters in the World War II, you know? And one family sat me down during an eating session and the matriarch sat down, opened up a family album going back into tintypes back in the 1880s
mm-hmm.
and showed me, these are our relatives that saw them in the 80s and were touched by them, possibly abducted by them, you know, this type of thing. And they walked all through the generations who had contact with these things. ET seems to be monitored in the book by the Edgar Mitchell Foundation, Beyond UFOs,
right?
Ray Hernandez and those guys. It seems that they are tracking certain families genetically over time. Okay. So again, this sort of answers that question. If you've been touched by it and your reality has been expanded a little bit, it's a little easier to see this stuff.
I love it. Well, I can't wait to see you at Contact in the Desert coming up June 25th through the 28th. And it's going to be a great time. I know we're going to get into more interesting and I'm sure slides and everything. So that's,
can I pitch the book?
Please pitch it.
Okay. If you want the book, don't go to my website, go to Amazon. It's exclusively at Amazon. They're not sharing it with anybody. Go to exclusive to Amazon, go to books, search for Cheryl Costa, Cheryl with a C, Costa with a C, and you'll get a bunch of books there. You'll see the 2017 book, which has 2001 to 2015. The pink book is the one you want to get.
Perfect. Get the book. And we're going to put it up on our website and a link.
One last thing for you.
You got it.
What's our next project? We're producing 50 individual state books.
Individual.
Just the specs for that state, and it will go right down for shapes, and right down all the shapes that state sees, but right down to the municipal level.
Wow.
If we tried to do it in the big book, it would have been the size of three Oxford dictionaries, over a foot thick, 6,800 pages is what we calculated. But we're going to do an individual state book. We're going to put out all 50 of them this year. And it'll be called the UFOs in the Skies of Arizona, Nevada, whatever. That's what they're going to be called. They're all going to be on Amazon. And it's going to be the largest publishing of UFO information in human history by the time we're done with this. It's 50 state books and 35 shape books.
Well, thank you for doing that. This is going to be great. I can't wait to read all about Kansas. And we're excited to have you back anytime. If when the books come out, let's bring you back and talk about them.
Let's do one where we can talk about Kansas.
I would love that. Yeah,
be happy to do that for you.
For my home state. All right, Cheryl, thank you so much. And thank everybody for tuning in today. We really appreciate it. Subscribe, leave a comment, share the show on our YouTube channel, and also all of our podcast outlets, Apple and iTunes and iHeart and blah, 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 all the outlets. So until next time, I'm Tony Sweet for Truth Be Told. Take care.